Today is November 3rd, 2009. We're in Bogota, Colombia, with Sergio Fajardo, former mayor of Medellin and now presidential candidate. Mr. Fajardo, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
I should correct myself, Dr. Fajardo.
No problem.
I thought we might begin by asking you to talk about planning, because you were meticulous about it in your administration, and you took a very strong stance on the importance of planning. So what's important to understand about the role of planning in your time as mayor?
The first thing that we have to know is that once you get into power, you have to know exactly what you want to do. It sounds trivial, but many times people, they just get into power and they want to do very many things, but we have very clearly in mind what we were going to do once we got into power. That's the first thing. Secondly, we had the team that would be able to carry out the tasks that we had in mind. And so the way you choose your team is crucial so that you will be able to do what you want to do. So we had a team that had five features, the people that made up the team. Namely, in first place, honest. Secondly, knowledgeable, people who know what they are going to do and they know about the issues that they are dealing with. Third, passion, in the sense that that was our purpose in getting into power. We wanted to transform the city. We wanted to make sure that all what we have dreamed about becomes a reality. Fourth, you have to have a team of people who have social sensibility. They understand the place, they understand people's needs, feelings and dreams and pains and everything. And fourth, or finally, we have to have decency in the way we relate to people. So we knew what we wanted to do. We had the team. And the way we have gotten into power, we made sure that we didn't have to negotiate the city with particular interests. So with all those three components, we were in the position to get things done. Now, we clearly have some priorities. For each one of those priorities that we call strategic projects, we assembled a group of people that would be dealing with it. We had a perfectly designed plan, the different stages that we will go through, so that we will be able to make sure that we will be complying with the different steps that we were going to take in order to achieve the final purpose. And we did it working permanently, all of us together, for each subject that we were dealing with. We had a way of following basically every instant on how the projects were developing. We could quickly identify where we had difficulties. We worked around solving those difficulties. And in that way, we were able to achieve what we wanted to do. And at the same time, we always made sure that we were communicating with the city, with everyone, letting them know where we were at each stage, so that people could, let's say, see the development of each project. So when we finish, everyone would see that realization as a process that took us from scratch to giving the city something powerful.
Now, you mentioned that you were very particular about communicating with the city. And as I understand it, you didn't rush. Once you assembled this team, you took the better part of the first year to continue planning, to develop your goals. How did you manage communications? How did you keep the pressure off in that planning, early planning phase?
That's usually difficult, because once you have a new government, right away people will start saying, well, let's see what these guys have to say and show. We were always saying we are planning so that we won't improvise. And we explain from day zero what we were doing. So, for example, just to illustrate, we were going to build a park library. So I had a TV program every week, which was named With the Mayor. Every Thursday night from 8:30 until 10. So that would be a privileged space to be in touch with citizens throughout the city, even beyond the city. And the first thing we will say, we are going to build a park library, and I would explain what a park library was all about. Those words, first of all, were my words, explaining what there should be in there, what would be the components. It would be just words explaining what we were going to do. Then we had the place where we were going to build the park library. So we would go directly to the place and we would say, in this lot, we are going to build a park library. But now there was the first a direct contact with the physical location where the park library was going to build. And I explain more now, located at the place. Why we are at this place? What is the community that is going to be directly affected by what we were going to do? Then, later on, we would have this, the, how do you say in English, the el concurso para el diseño del
the
no, this was designed by architects. We had a competition, so with the contest, and then we chose one project as the winner. So then we would go to that, to this slot with the architects that had won the competition, the contest. Then they would explain what they have designed for the place. So we will have the first sketches of what is going to be, or what was going to be happening in that piece of land in the city. Then we would have the people who won the contest for building the place. So we will make sure that we would explain how the process had been carried out, so people would see that this was a transparent process, that it was, everyone could see what was done. So then at the same slot we would have the architects and the builders, and then we will come there later and say this is the first stone being put into the place. Then we would have the people who had worked with the community, because we moved the community around the place so that it wouldn't be a building that appears there after some years. And what we would be doing is having a team of people working with the community, showing different aspects of what was going to be built in there and what it was going to be for. So there was a social mobilization, readings, theater, and explaining to people what was going to happen in there. So from day zero, the city will see directly what was happening in that place. So as we moved along, then later on during the construction of the building, we will go there and we'll say, look how it is right now, how much we have advanced. And the day that we inaugurated the place, everyone had followed the process. So it was a very rich process. And once we had it done, people will be very happy and proud of what we had done. So we kept the city tuned on what we were doing so that everyone could feel that the city was being transformed. And we tried to do that in all the projects that we were carrying out in the city. So that gave us a very direct relationship with the citizens in the city, people were proud of what was happening, and something very crucial, they saw things happening, and that was very powerful.
So you were clearly very conscious about managing the public constituency for your reforms, but of course the other side is the politicians. You broke a long tradition of traditional party dominance in Medellin. You were as well known, you were an independent candidate. But how did you interact with the traditional political interests in the city?
We defined the relationship that we were going to have with the city council. That's where the politicians related to the city life would go every day. And during the first semester, we discussed in this within the councilmen, we discussed our development plan. Since we knew what we were going to do, they were part of the discussions. We asked them to get involved with whatever ideas they had so that our projects could be improved, could be improved is the word, so that they would also feel part of what was going to be happening in there. And so we were able to build a working relationship with the politicians in the city, and we built trust. And since they were seeing what was happening and they were seeing how the community was reacting to this, we managed to have a good, decent working atmosphere so that we didn't have to go through political battles, but there were some natural discussions, but basically we worked all together.
Now, when most people think of city councils, two words that come to mind are patronage and clientelism in most settings in the world. How was that an issue for you? How did you confront that problem?
From the very beginning, we said, there are no contracts for anyone here. We are not going to give the bureaucratic positions to politicians. We are going to work around this development plan, and that's why that's the reason we were elected. And since we didn't negotiate the interests of the city in the development of the political campaign, so once we got into power, we didn't have to come into power to divide it to private or political interest, but we were able to work for the whole interests of the city. So from day zero, we have established a relationship that broke with this tradition, and we defined the ground where we were going to interact, and we were very successful.
And beyond the city council, you were also very clear on transparency and that you were going to not accept any corruption in your administration. How did you go about that? Because that was a significant change from the past again.
Once again, everything could be seen, everything would be explained, so that people would see and feel that the public resources were used where they were supposed to use to be used. In all the boards that we had, for example, in all the places that we were intervening, there was a phrase that would say, here are your taxes. And that was always a message to people. We increased the land tax from the very beginning. We collected the money, but we showed people that the money that they have paid to the city was directly used into these social interventions that we were carrying out.
Now, you mentioned that you raised the land tax, and your administration is well known for that, but it's the envy of every mayor. How did you do that?
We just... Usually, people in the administrations are afraid of having higher taxes. And that many times, many of the administrators want to avoid raising taxes. And usually, many times the councilmen would be against taxes because they know that people, in principle, don't want to pay. Nobody is for an increase in taxes. But from day one, we said that we were going to do it. We were going to follow the rules that are established in our constitution. But we were bold in the sense that we were going to do. We explained the reasons why we were going to do it. And anyone who had any question about it could ask. And it was our duty to answer all those questions. And people paid. People paid. People trusted us. And so we collected the taxes. We had our public utilities company, which is a very powerful public utilities company. And so we had the money. And we used that money according to what it was our political proposal for the city. And everyone felt that we were doing exactly what we said that we were going to do it. And of course, this was associated with the communication program that we had, so the people will see it. And that's the main reason for our success.
And out of this very careful planning process emerged a focus, a catchphrase, that Medellin would be the most educated. And education really defined at least the rhetoric, the language of your administration.
Exactly.
Why? It's not immediately obvious why education.
Well, I come from the world of education. And I have spent a good deal of my life, a good part of my life, talking about the importance of education in order to transform a society. Usually with the education, the problem is that everyone in a political campaign, regardless of the ideology or the party, would say education is the most important thing. That happens all over the world. Now the problem is how you make sure that that phrase becomes a reality, and that's what we knew. We knew exactly what we were going to bet on. We knew what type of stages we had to go through. We knew, and we were sure that the way we got into education, which was understood in a broad sense, not just education, which relates to school, but science, technology, innovation, entrepreneurship, and culture. And we had a powerful tool to making sense of that, which was an urban transformation. We said the first step in building this would be building the places where we could get together, which is necessary when you are fighting violence. Violence splits people, divides people into smaller groups. People are afraid of moving around. So we knew that we had to build the new places to get together, once again, into the public space. And everything that we did, or almost everything, because we did very many things, had that character. So whatever we did, we explained it around this narrative about education understood in that broad sense. So we built park libraries, which are not libraries in the traditional sense. It's a way of getting together in a place where you had the components that you have been able to see. We talk about entrepreneurship, but we had the social entrepreneurship program, which had a physical expression everywhere. We talk about science and technology. We built the Explorer Park, which is a new symbol of the city, where it's knowledge and it would be for everyone, and so on. So we had our idea. We knew how we were going to carry it out. We transformed the city physically, which was a powerful message to the poorest communities. And that was the key to our success. We knew what we wanted to do.
But your program for education, it wasn't without its challenges. One of which, as I understand it, was the teachers' union. That was a relationship you had to find a middle ground with there. Could you talk about that challenge and how you dealt with it?
By my trajectory was associated with education in that broad sense that I have mentioned. So we never negotiated with the teacher union before we got into power. We explained what we were going to do it, to be doing once in power. And actually the teacher union supported another candidate. But once I was in the streets walking with our people, I would find many teachers who would come to us and said, we are with you. And once we got into power, we said we're going to work together. We didn't come into a confrontation, but said we're going to make sure that education is the key in this city. So without having negotiated anything, once we got into power, we realized what by far, but beyond any expectation of any teachers' union, a project that would give sense to recuperating the dignity of public teachers, the public schools, and that was very powerful. And we worked with them in all the projects that we were carrying out. We didn't have a single strike in the city while I was the mayor. A strike by the teachers in the city, which was very often, very common in public education. We created the program Medellin, the Most Educated. I talked about education. I recognized myself as a teacher. So this created a different atmosphere. I visited I don't know how many schools. Nobody, and I would claim in the world, has done what we did, and in particular, how many schools I attended. We didn't go to the schools or the teachers saying that they were bad. We said, we are all good, and let's work together. So we created the conditions so that they would be proud of what has happened in the city. For the first time, people were looking at education, and public education in particular, as something valuable, and we recuperated the dignity of education, and it could be seen and felt by the people in the city.
And one of the high-profile aspects of your work on education were these quality pacts that you signed.
Right.
But it wasn't just education, you signed other pacts. What was the idea behind pacts, and why did they appeal?
Around every subject, we wanted to get the people from society that had to deal with that subject. And what we always did was, this is our plan, let's work together. We invited different sectors to be part of what we were going to do. And so that was a breakthrough with regard to the ways many times government is seen, because usually it's the government by itself, and everyone is subsidiary to what the government does. We said, come with us, let's work together. And we did that systematically in as many subjects as we could. So people would feel part of a group. And that created trust. And so we tried, and I guess I could put it this way, the best from everyone in order to have the best for the city. And I guess that was very powerful. Since we weren't dividing the city to particular interests, we were able to make clear what it means to work for the public good.
So this idea of participation intersects with planning in an interesting way with a participatory budget. Why was this important? Why was that participatory budget a big part of how you chose to administer?
We didn't negotiate with anyone in order to get into power. So once we got into power, we would be able to come to call the people from the different sectors of the city. Now I'm talking about the barrios, the comunas, and we asked them, let's work together. We have these resources that traditionally had been used just by the government, and they would do exactly what they want, or with the leaders that were their followers, and said, let's take a look at this. We have these resources that we want to make, to have people saying what has to be done with those. So it opened up a way of community participation. People would discuss. People from different parts of a neighborhood would come and say what they wanted. And this was a very good process in the sense that it increased participation. And when people feel that they are included in what is happening, their reaction is always positive. So it wasn't a government that had the money, so it would put the conditions into everyone, but we said, let's do it together. And for the very first time, I think many voices were heard that hadn't been taken into account before.
So let's stay with this idea of the comunas, the barrios, the poorer parts of Medellin. You invested large amounts of money, constructed world-class architecture in what have been some of the most dangerous neighborhoods in the Americas. Why?
Because we have perfectly clear that we had to work with the communities, and we had to had a rupture with the traditional idea that whatever, if you have poor neighborhoods, whatever you give to them is an improvement because they have very little or nothing. And it was a political decision. The most beautiful things that we have in this society, the best that we can have in this society, would go to those places where they had never had a chance to have the best. So, and the architecture came into the political atmosphere, and having the most wonderful buildings built in the poorest sector was a very powerful to the communities. The beautiful things are not for the privileged people in society. The beautiful things with this concept of education around would be for our poorest communities. And that meant that for them we opened up a door that was locked. And that made them proud. We gave them dignity. And as a matter of fact, the whole city was proud with what was happening. And it was a very powerful message. It said the social inclusion. We have to fight against social inequalities. And this was a way of expressing it in something that would be tangible.
Now, you worked on a tremendous amount of fronts. You had social urbanism, education, we talked about taxes. It begs the question, what couldn't you do? What was the trade-off? If you had all these priorities, what did you have to sacrifice in order to achieve all these other great things?
I have been asked that question many times, and I would say nothing. We did what we wanted to do. Some things we did more than we expected to do. We showed how every peso could be transformed into a social investment. Now, there is the social transportation system. Medellin has a metro, has had a metro for more than 10 years. And there is under construction right now another part with this massive transport system using buses that would connect with the metro system to have a whole system integrated in the city. With that, we had problems. Now, from the very beginning, we understood, and I myself realized that it would be something that we couldn't control, because there were many components taking a say into that project. For example, the national government. And they would make decisions that would affect the project. So we quickly realized that we could not bet on this system, because we were trapped in the sense that we couldn't control the project, we couldn't go through the stages, because, as I said, there were many interests that would affect the project. So I would say that it would have been nice to have that system integrated, but I realized that we couldn't bet on it, in the sense that making it our government or one of our government's targets, because there was plenty of room, there was plenty of space that we didn't have a say in there, and then we couldn't assume a responsibility with the city with something that wasn't in our hands.
Now, you mentioned the national government, and as mayor of Medellin, you were clearly one of the most high-profile figures in the country. In most situations, there's sometimes some tension there between the national government and regional leaders. How did that relationship work out for you?
We we had a good relationship with the government, national government. And of course, because we knew what we were going to do, we were organized, we had very clearly in mind. So for the national government, which has to work with the local governments throughout the country, working with us was very easy because we were organized and we made things happen. So it was a good place for the government to work because they could see that whenever we work together, things turn out well. So we didn't have a political confrontation, said we're working on this, and we worked, and it was very serious, and I have no complaints.
Mm-hmm. And again, thinking on a national level, one of the aspects of your tenure that distinguished Medellin was you oversaw an amazing improvement in the security situation. It was a drastic change. What is the story behind that?
It's a complicated story, and it's a story that it's very often under question, and it's part of the attacks that I will receive, I have received, and I will receive as a presidential candidate. The national government negotiated with the paramilitary narco-traffickers of Colombia a peace agreement. That was negotiated in the year 2003, before we even won the election. So the national government negotiated with them, and in that negotiation had an impact on Medellin, because in Medellin we had the presence of paramilitary groups, and the government negotiated with them a demobilization process. So once we got into power, then the government had negotiated with them, and there were plenty of these former paramilitary that would be demobilized according to the agreements that the national government made, and then they would be handed out to us. They would be in our territory. We made a decision, in spite of the fact that these groups during the campaign were against us. For example, and I usually don't talk about this, but some of those groups would go to places where we had our presence, and they would threaten people saying that they shouldn't vote for me. And actually, a week before the election, there were some parts of the city that where they were handing out leaflets saying that I was a guerrilla guy and I was the number one enemy of President Uribe. But once we got into power, we took the decision and said, these guys are here. These guys are the expression of all the violence that we have had for decades. So we took in our hands the process of reintegration. That was a political decision that we made. And before I even got into power, January the 1st, 2004, on December, just 15 days before we got in there, the first 868, that number I will never forget, of these demobilized peoples came into the streets of Medellin as demobilized. So we said, we have to work with them. They are going to be in the city. Who is going to be who is going to be in charge of them? And we said, we are going to do it. And we designed a reintegration process. This ended up being more than 4,000 guys who would have been demobilized, who had been into crime, different forms of crime. And we worked with them. We designed a project. And during that time that they were demobilized, we used that condition in order to make sure that we would come quickly into the city to have all these social interventions. And that was the point. After I finished as a mayor, in April, March of 2008, the national government stopped the process with them. And from then, violence escalated once again. So some people say that we had an agreement with them in order to run the city. And as I have explained, everyone there was, or some people will say, no, there was an implicit agreement. Said, no, nothing implicit. The national government had an explicit agreement with them. What we did was we made sure we tried to get as many of them out of violence and Once we were working on that, we will come up very quickly with these social interventions. That's something difficult. It's difficult because it was a decision of the national government, and the national government has a particular characteristic. President Uribe is associated with right wing and so on. And we in Medellin, we were making sure that this would work, because it was our decision to make it work for the sake, for the improvement of the city. So this gets tangled with many political interpretations. And of course, after I finished, I became a national known figure. And once we get into the presidential race, then we will be the subject of attacks. And they will try to destroy whatever we did, associating that with the narcotraffic and the paramilitary. That's the dirty part of politics. We have explained it. We explained it throughout, but that's part of what is discussed, and I have always explained every time about what we have done, why we have done it, why I believe that we did the right thing. But then we get into this dirty world of politics, and of course, I'm very proud of what we achieved, all the recognition that we have gotten. And the simplest way of explaining it, can go around the country looking into people's eyes, and that's our political capital, trust. They will try to destroy that, they will try to destroy me, they will try to destroy Medellin, trying to get a political advantage. But, well, you have been there, and you saw it, and after all, what we have done is, it could be summarized in the following sense. We have been narrowing every day the entrance door into the legal world. That door had been wide open in Medellin, unfortunately, painfully, because Medellin has paid for dearly with violence throughout decades now. And what we did was we were narrowing that door, which means with all the social interventions that we did, what we have been trying to make sure is that once we get our people to get to the places that we built, to the programs that we designed and we had for the city, nobody will take that door and go in that direction. And that's something that I strongly believe. And that's our stand. The current mayor came from our movement. We managed to hold on to power, and I had plenty of enemies, because we showed that things could be done differently. We gave sense or meaning to the word transparency. We got all this recognition, and I got plenty of enemies, as I said, because they would never stand that we took them out of power. And that's it, the way it is.
So I know your time is very short these days, so I think I'll...
Enseguida.
A quick closing couple of questions. Are there lessons you take from your tenure? Are there advice that you would offer to others who face similar challenges?
Don't negotiate the public interest don't negotiate the city during the elections, because the way you get into power will define the way you will handle the administration. And we were free, and we were able to do it for everyone. One, because transparency is the equivalent of trust, and that's the best political capital that you can have. Secondly, you have to know what you want to do. And then if you don't have to pay and you know what you want to do, have a very careful process of planning so that you could see what you had dreamed being turned into reality. I talked to many mayors afterwards, and I would always tell them, What would you like people to remember you after 4 years? You have to have that picture in mind before you get in there, so that you will mobilize into that direction. And that's what we did. It works. Bring people to work with you, make sure that you get the best from everyone, and design a ground where you can work with your rules, where decency should be crucial.
And so a final question. A lot of people stress the importance of having a leader who can articulate a vision, to sell people a dream. How did you do that? How did you communicate your vision to people?
From day zero. We entered this world unknown to me 10 years ago. And we said that we were going to do some things. The way we behaved from day zero up to today has been perfectly coherent. We had some basic set of principles that we have respected all the time, and we have coherent. And what we say, we represent. And that's the crucial thing. And we never backed off in front of a problem. We always moved forward. We knew where we were going to go, and we always moved forward. They always told me that we were crazy. They always told me that it was impossible, that it didn't make sense, that we had to do it other way. And here we are.
Well, Dr. Fajardo, thank you for being so generous with your time.
Okay, thank you very much for coming here.